The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul with guests Brian Mick and Brad Updike of Mick Law, a due diligence firm based in Omaha, Nebraska, which earlier this month produced the Mick Law Energy and Global Alt Symposium in oil-rich Dallas, Texas. I was there, so were a lot of oil and gas and other energy-related interests. And Brian Mick and Brad Updike joined me by phone from their base in Omaha, Nebraska. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to join you.
In the interest of disclosure, I should mention that Mick Law is a sponsoring organization for Real Assets Advisor magazine, and Brian Mick is also a member of our editorial advisory board. So, gentlemen, explain the objective of the Energy and Global Alt Symposium. I mean, I was there. I have my own impressions, but for the record, what's the objective of the conference?
Well, the objective of the conference, Mike, is to provide a venue where broker-dealers, registered investment advisors, and family offices can learn about energy underwriting, the economics of the deals, the process that our petroleum engineering consultants go through in valuation, and then analysis of the deal structure and disclosures from the legal side.
Tell me what you guys saw as the highlights of this year's symposium. It was held, by the way, for our listeners, it was held June 4th through 6th, again in Dallas, Texas. What were your impressions in terms of the high points of the conference?
Overall, I was impressed with the lineup of the oil and gas sponsors that we had attend. It wasn't just a mix of drilling sponsors either. Rather, I think we had a diverse mix of companies that offer a multiple investment strategies in drilling, royalties, lease development, and solar energy. There were also a lot of new client faces that attended our conference for the very first time, especially from the RIA family office side of the industry. I think attendance was extremely good considering, that we're going through a lot of regulatory reform, and there's been just a little bit of a slowdown in business activity in the non-traded alternative sector over the last couple months. We had 60 clients and about over 130, 140 attendees, so we were pleased.
And a good turnout in light of the fact that oil prices are not exactly robust right now. It seems that many of the oil and gas companies, smaller scale companies anyway, have found ways to stay operational, you know, despite the low prices that they're suffering through right now. But, you know, they're not necessarily returning a lot to investors right now. Do you agree that that the investment environment right now for oil and gas is a bit muted, or do you see something different than I'm articulating right now?
Yeah, you know, it certainly seems that way, but performance in the real estate and energy sectors follow closely with market cycles. How your energy program performs, it's often a function of when you deployed your investor capital and what oil and gas prices were when you put the capital to work. By way of example, higher oil prices like $90 to $100 a barrel, that's very good for gross revenue, but you know, it costs more to drill wells in an up market when you've got those kind of prices because vendors of supplies and services charge more in an up market. And it also costs more to buy leases and royalty interests in an up market. Historical performance in the retail channel has also proven that. For example, looking at drilling and royalty programs that were offered in the late 1990s and in 2000 through 2004, those programs did fairly well due to less pricing volatility and stable capital costs. You know, oil prices were lower at $25 to $50 a barrel, but asset costs and CapEx were very, very stable. and a high percentage of sponsors actually performed, I think, fairly well during that time. Now, compare that to what's going on recently in 2012, the 2013, the 2014 vintage years. We had $100 oil, but we also have higher lease acquisition and drilling costs, which was followed then by a period of low and rather unstable commodities pricing and CapEx pricing. So, you know, performance tends to follow cycles, and I think you want to take a hard look at just good buying practices. You want to buy, I think, buy low and sell high. Brian, do you agree
with
that?
Yeah. And to follow up on Brad's points, I think they're, unfortunately, behavioral economics is very strong, especially in the retail sector. And I would say 4 years ago, we had, you know, 15 or 16 participants on the, you know, carbon-based energy side, if you will, and maybe half that number at this year's meeting. And as our friend here in Omaha, Warren Buffett, says, if you're a lifetime consumer of cheeseburgers, do you want to pay $2 or $1 for a cheeseburger? And I think that plays out in the current energy environment. I mean, if people were excited about energy opportunities when oil was at $100 a barrel, why wouldn't they be at 48? And I think another point is, yes, on some of these more legacy deals, it's we're not seeing much of a return on or a return of capital given the current spot pricing environment. However, a couple of the issuers that were at our meeting are in the royalty business and the lease bank business. And if you're in the royalty or lease bank business in the areas where production is profitable at these levels, i.e. The Permian and the Scoop and Stack in Oklahoma, you can get you know, low to mid-teen or better returns in this environment. Now, if you're in a royalty program or you're sitting on leases in the Bakken, that's a different story.
You also mentioned something about oil and gas companies that have found a way to stay operational. I would just point out the ones that have found a way to stay operational have low to manageable leverage, and that has been a problem with certain sponsors in the non-traded retail energy space. We've seen some sponsors that have gotten in trouble with leverage and are unfortunately having to go through reorganization and liquidation. I think you'd want to look very hard at the leverage, the debt position of the sponsor, and their ability to cover the interest payments as a part of your sponsor-level due diligence.
And to Brian's point, a carbon-based or not, you guys had the conference packed. I'm talking about just wall-to-wall presentations by companies, oil and gas companies, mineral companies, solar, and so on. So what about qualifying to be a presenter at one of the symposiums? What qualifies a company, and what kind of vetting is done?
Well, Mike, we think our educational symposia in the energy, private equity, and real estate space are unique in the sense that really the presenters either have to be pre-qualified or at least in the process of undergoing due diligence at the time with our firm. And I think that creates a more amenable environment for, you know, conversations and learning, because in a lot of the other industry events, and frankly events you know, sponsored by other due diligence rubber stampers, there is no process. And so when they come to our meeting, they know that our firm has reviewed them both at the sponsor or issuer level, and then also the relevant deals that are being discussed. We try to focus on, in our meetings, on the competency of management, organizational chart issues, financial strength, underwriting analysis, really a more global issuer or sponsor look, rather than, you know, pitching particular deals. So with our firm, we go through the sponsor company legal opinion, and we're discussing, and analyzing a whole host of issues, right? Management team, functional processes, accounting procedures, protection of customer data, IT security. We're pulling files to validate prior performance, interviewing their securities lawyers, accountants, prior investors. And then really you move to the offering side, whatever the, royalty fund, drilling fund, whatever it may be, analyzing the reserves and the value of the assets, production costs, severance taxes, transportation, really running all the economics at the asset level, and then pouring those economics and our modeling, not sponsor numbers, our modeling into the partnership structure, and then, figuring out the preferred return and the split on the back end, and then carried interest components and management fee and those issues.
Yeah, to summarize what Brian said, yeah, we're wanting to put together a lineup of oil and gas companies that can provide, I think, a reasonable opportunity for a competitive investment return, not considering income tax benefits, and also on a utilizing conservative economic assumptions. As a part of our due diligence, we request pro formas from the sponsor, and we'll certainly look at them, but we use our own numbers. That's where our engineering experts out of Dallas, Steve Burr, come in handy. We get his input in respect to the fairness of drilling and operating costs. What we also lean on him heavily in terms of researching what production trends we're seeing in various areas close to the target area of program drilling. And then we'll come up with really our own return scenario as to what we think a reasonable set of economics would be under conservative mid-case production scenarios, utilizing average production and not the high case.
Now, you mentioned the name Steve Burr. I'm not familiar with Steve. I'm sure our listeners are not. Who is this mystery man? Tell us about Steve Burr.
Steve is a partner in BCS Energy Services. He and his partner, Truett Matthews, are our petroleum engineers. Spent quite a bit of time at Netherland Sewell. They have their own practice now. And we utilize, depending on the location of the assets, the particular basin, we utilize those gentlemen in most of the underwriting that is then built into our legal opinions. We also have a gentleman named Dan Billman out in Pittsburgh. He is practicing geologist, and he's focused more on the Marcellus Shale area, areas in Kentucky, Tennessee, et cetera. So, and then in addition to that, obviously we research information with the Oklahoma Corporation Commission, Texas Railroad Commission. We have a subscription to drillinginfo.com, which gives us well permits, production numbers, and other useful market data.
So at the end of the symposium, you also gather the investors and have a closed session. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe what you do is you review the presentations. You talk about the ones that you thought were particularly good. I was not privy to that. That's a closed session. I don't think you wanted the media in there. But tell us about that session at the end, that where you gather the investors. What are you hoping to accomplish with that?
From a general perspective, we're looking for feedback from our clients and prospective clients on the format of the conference, the content, quality, and quantitative of the company presentations. We have, as you know, five or six purely educational sessions throughout the conference. So we're looking first and foremost for client feedback. What did they hear? What did they learn? What would they like to see? What can we do differently? And then we really do a rundown. And a number of the firms that presented at our meeting, we've looked at their deals, issued opinions on their firm and their offerings for, you know, over a decade. So we want to update our clients, or convey to our clients our firm's history with particular sponsors, good and bad. We also want to tell them, you know, quite candidly in the closed room, what we think in terms of, you know, ranking performance and structure and, you know, investor treatment over a period of time. And then in some cases, we may have allowed a firm to come that has simply initiated the relationship with our firm. So we want to make sure that we let the clients know that we haven't, you know, completed the process, and to be, you know, wary might be too strong a term, but to be deliberative in their process in terms of waiting for us to complete our analysis and get them our opinion before considering signing a selling agreement on a particular deal.
Practical perspective, I would say 75% though of the presenting companies, I think, have gone through rigorous due diligence. So, you know, it's hard to actually, I guess, drill down to the weeds and provide maybe a 30-minute, you know, SWOT analysis on all of them. But we certainly provide a summary of that. We talk about, you know, the strengths of the presenters, and we, you know, to the extent there are concerns and issues that we like to see addressed, we'll certainly bring that to our clients' attention during that closed session.
So it might be impolitic to ask you guys to do this, but what investment opportunity were you most impressed with? Or maybe another way to put this is that if you were to make a share a video of one presentation as an example for future symposiums, and we're going to say, you know, here is a good blueprint for a good presentation and a good offer, is there anybody you'd single out from this this year's symposium?
You know, it wasn't just one, but I think it was many. We've been doing the oil and gas symposiums now for 6 years. I think that this year was special in the fact that this was a really good lineup of presenters. But I was impressed with the relationships that Waveland Resource Partners has established with Council Oak Resources and with DJ Resources out of Denver. Both of these companies have put together some very promising leasehold development projects in the Stack Play and also in the San Juan Basin in New Mexico, especially DJ Resources in respect to the San Juan Basin, where the barriers to entry are very low and where lease costs are low right now. I think from a drilling program perspective, you got Mewbourne Oil Company out of Tyler, Texas. You know, they lead the way. They're drilling the best wells in the Delaware Basin. And the oil pricing environment right now, I think, sets up very well for them. Additionally, we also had, two sound royalty sponsor companies present this year. You've got Resource Royalty based in Dallas, which is concentrating its acquisition efforts in the Stack Play of Oklahoma, which has received very positive media attention. And then you've also got Montego Minerals, which is based in Midland, Texas, which is focusing its acquisition efforts in the Permian Basin. Both are well staffed, and I think they also demonstrate a good research and due diligence practices in their acquisition efforts. Plus, the principals and executives of these companies have been buying minerals and royalties for over 20 years. I think that's what you want to see. You don't want to, I think, put your money with a Johnny come lately. You want experience on your side.
From my perspective, Mike, I think, you know, we could break it down by category, as Brad said, and you know, there were a number of quality companies there. But if you're going to put together a diversified portfolio of private investments in the energy space, I think you have to make it a combination of drilling royalties, lease banks, and, you know, maybe an opportunity fund or infrastructure fund. So, you know, you put together a package of, you know, Mewbourne, Montego, and Waveland, all with different business objectives. and most importantly, different return objectives based upon time frames. If you were now, natural gas has ticked up, of course, and so the East Coast, you know, large horizontal shale drilling operations are starting to produce better cash flows, but your return is, you know, 70% of your return can be realized in the first 15, 18 months of the program. So with a hyperbolic decline curve, if you're doing a drilling deal in today's environment, your overall return on the program may be more challenged, whereas in a lease bank or a royalty situation, you have a much longer period of time to really realize the economics of the program. The overriding theme, and I think our firm has been instrumental in the industry in creating these trends, if you will, pushing back on firms to restructure their offerings. The overriding theme is the offerings today are much better structured, have better economics to the investor than you know the traditional drilling program of 10 years ago. We've moved from turnkey you know pricing with 25% profit to the issuer, the sponsor, to in most cases a cost plus 5, cost plus 10% type of a structure. The quality folks, you know, are delivering at cost plus a small margin. There's co-investment of money from the sponsor side. The carried interests in the deals are a lot thinner. So if you know, ceteris paribus, all things being equal, we can't do anything about the spot price of West Texas Intermediate. But we can do something about pushing to make sure that the structure of the deal itself results in an alignment of interests of the investors and the sponsoring company. And I think you've seen a lot of development in that regard in the last decade.
Let's finish up by talking about OPEC just a little bit. Saudi Arabia and OPEC. We listened to Dan Steffens kick off the conference, and for our listeners' edification, Dan Steffens is he's the founder and president of Energy Prospectus Group, and he said that the Saudis took probably the biggest gamble in energy history, and it cost them $200 billion to $300 billion. They wanted to, basically, they would have killed off every company at your conference if they had it their way. They flooded the market with cheap oil. Now they're kind of running the other direction, and fix my history on this if I'm misspeaking, but they had really pretty limited success, if you can call it success at all, in terms of trying to drive U.S. Small-scale U.S. drillers out of business, and now they are trying to pump up prices to try to stabilize the market. How big an impact do you think Saudi Arabia and OPEC has had on U.S. drillers? Obviously, some of them have as you mentioned, Brad, have been driven out of business, but there's still a lot of companies out there that are using the new technologies that are available and cutting costs and keeping themselves operational. So, long way of saying, you know, what has been the impact of Saudi Arabia and OPEC, and what do you see going forward?
Yeah, where OPEC has, you know, made some concessions in its output, you know, we see a lot of players in the U.S. Domestic oil and gas markets, you know, they're ramping up and they're really, you know, they're ramping up their drilling efforts and they're producing a lot more. So it's kind of a counterbalancing effect. And in light of that, from our own due diligence and project evaluation perspectives, yeah, we are being very conservative in our underwriting of oil and gas programs. We look at things a couple different ways. We're never going to go above, you know, the NYMEX strip in our underwriting. We don't factor in upside. I mean, the NYMEX strip is our upside case, and, you know, we'll also do stress testing, and we'll want to see if these programs can survive at $40, $45 oil over a very long period of time. We're not counting on oil and gas pricing to increase considerably over the next couple of years. So we're taking a very conservative approach.